Here comes Speed Racer, he's a demon on wheels. He's a demon and he's gonna be chasing after someone. He's gaining on you, so you better look alive. He's busy revving up the powerful Mach 5. And when the odds are against him and there's dangerous work to do, bet your life, Speed Racer, see it through. Go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go. He's often flying as he guns a car around the track. He's jamming down the pedal like he's never coming back. Adventure's waiting just ahead. Go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go!
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and guest do not necessarily reflect those of this station, the station's network, any other affiliates under this network, or its sponsors.
This is what you have been waiting for, Equipped Tech Talk with Parahunter. And now, here is your host, Pete Stagman.
Hey, good evening, everybody. It is, we got the dogs whining in the background, June 17th. It is Monday night, and the dogs are, actually, we may lose, can you stop that? That's Donna messing with the dogs, getting them all worked up. We are having some kind of nasty weather, so hopefully we won't be losing power. But we'll, and there's our dog doing the Wookiee impression. And tonight our guest is Antonio Paris from Aerial Phenomena. Hey, how are you, Antonio?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me here, Pete.
Hey, let me give you a clap.
I'm a nurse. I'll give you a shot for that
tomorrow. Well, everybody that comes on our show has to, we have to give the clap. So you're just another in the long line.
That's fine. Well appreciated.
And again, joining me tonight is my lovely wife, Donna. Say hi, Donna.
Howdy.
All right. Why don't you move that mic a little closer?
Howdy.
That's better. Yep. So, Antonio, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, basically, I am an old Army guy, spent most of my time in the Intelligence Corps, doing pretty cool stuff for our country, specializing in counterintelligence, and I guess the best way to describe that would be a spy catcher. And so around 2005, around that time frame, I decided to close that chapter in my life and not make the Army a career. And decided to go where, plain and simple, where there was more money. And right. That was in the consulting business here in Washington, D.C. And it was right about halfway through grad school when I was studying planetary science that I decided to investigate UFOs. You know, it's something that I've always been interested in my entire life. I loved, you know, astronomy, planetary science, space, you know, the possibility of extraterrestrial life out there. And what I really did was just merge the two skill sets that I have. And that was a federal investigator, you know, how to conduct investigations through a process. And then my education in planetary science. So I kind of became what I, you know, sometimes call myself as the Sherlock Holmes of UFO investigations.
Oh, cool. When I was a kid, I had a huge interest in UFOs, and I used to go out and I'd sky watch and stuff. But then I don't know what happened. I kind of got bored with it because I don't think I ever saw anything.
Sure.
And then I moved.
Huh? Yeah, you know, my deputy once told me that UFOs don't like to be hunted. So I had my share of sky watches and UFO watches and all that stuff, and I learned that they typically don't come out when you want them to come out. I even had my share of going out to meet people who say that they can summon UFOs, You know, they say they can summon them 7 days a week, and of course, when I show up with all my gear, I guess they go on leave or on vacation because they tend not to show up when I arrive.
Yeah, of course.
I might just be a jinx. I might be a UFO jinx, but typically they never show up when I'm in the area.
Okay. So, yeah, actually, I was in the Army, too. I was 7 years. I did 3 years as a aircraft fire control, and I did 4 years in NBC.
Oh, cool. Aircraft. Was that school out in Texas?
No, that school, that was in Fort Eustis, Virginia.
Okay. All right. I have a friend who was an Army firefighter, but his school was in
Oh, no, fire control. Not firefighter. Fire control. Weapon systems.
Oh, okay. Missiles. Okay.
Yep. So I did that for a few 3 years and then switched to NBC, which was, you know.
Oh, the gas cleaner.
Yeah. I was actually NBC Recon, which was a whole different thing.
Okay, yeah. I thought you were one of those guys that wouldn't let me check out until I turned in the gas mask.
Well, that too. That was what we did when we weren't running the gas chamber and, you know, out in the Fox vehicles.
Cool. Well, we have some stuff in common. That's cool.
Yep, that's cool. So, like you said, you always had an interest in it. So what kind of things do you do?
Well, the stuff that I'm interested in is not really, you know, I look for the nuts and bolts of UFOs. You know, I get lots of reports that come in, you know, in the hundreds. And, you know, obviously we're a small shop and we have to triage the cases. We can't just chase every light in the sky, every claim of abduction and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm looking for is a little different than what most UFO organizations out there. We are looking at the phenomena from a nuts and bolts perspective. And the way I define that is an actual craft, a picture, a video, or a sighting of something physical, metallic, that was observed and made some type of unusual maneuver. And I triage the case even more. So we're very strict on what cases we like to look out there. And we use our criteria, and that is, you know, we like to have multiple witnesses. We would prefer a daytime sighting. We would prefer a credible witness or witnesses. More importantly, some type of evidence, a video, a photo, something that we can actually analyze other than just the witness report. And even sound and things like that. And if you put all those things together, they make, you know, for a really excellent report, that's something that you can actually, something that's tangible and you can actually go out and investigate. And that's the kind of stuff that we like to do. Don't get me wrong, we still look at every report that comes in. We analyze it. We put it in the database for future analysis so that mm-hmm. in the future, let's say, a certain part of Maryland had 300 reports of a strange light in the last 5 years. Then that's something probably that we can go back to and analyze from a bigger strategic analysis. But right now we're really looking for that hard, that, and I like to use the term proof beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, I want to bring something to, whether it's an educational forum, a court of law, or anywhere where I can say, okay, guys, here it is. This is undisputable proof. And that's what we're trying to do.
Excellent.
I got a question.
Okay.
I might have an answer.
Okay, so is your research and investigating strictly, how can I say it, restricted to, like, what the common, not from this universe, or do you also investigate interdimensional? Because isn't there something, some hubbub out there?
There is. That's the kind of stuff what I call the fringe science, new age science, and things like that. In my first chapter in the book, I specifically write that we're not in the business of I hate to use the word entertaining, but entertaining things like interdimensional travel, government conspiracies, alleged mm-hmm. cover-ups, time travel. Those are good things for other organizations to do. But once you'll learn quickly if we start investigating those type of allegations, we really start going down a lot of rabbit holes that really derail the investigative process. And who knows, maybe in the future, as we continue to grow and mature and we refine the investigative process, and we get reports that are credible based on those type of reports you mentioned, that's something that we can probably do in the future. But you know, a lot of that stuff is just theory right now. You know, there's a lot of people saying, well, you know, I always have the question, okay, you know, MUFON's got 10,000 reports last year about UFOs. My question is, great, where are the aliens? You know, if you've got that many reports, you know, there's got to be some type of physical proof.
Oh, they're all frozen. They're all frozen at Area 51.
Yeah, there's anecdotal evidence out there, credible, you know, witness here and there, and then you get your occasional deathbed confession out there, and that's great, but that's not the stuff we're doing. We kind of want to stick to, you know, I see myself as having one responsibility, and that is providing that burden of proof, you know, and that's what I'm looking for, is that burden of proof and that physical proof that I can provide to the community.
Sorry, you caught me with a piece of pizza in my mouth.
Oh! yesterday I was
busted.
In Florida.
I got busted. I was actually going to ask you about something. Like, what's the... Is there any case that you know of that you think is you know, is really good? I know that there's nothing that's perfect, but I mean, like Kecksburg is the one that always pops into mind. Roswell, I'm kind of burnt on Roswell.
And that's why I call this reviving ufology for the 21st century. I want to move forward from it's okay. It's okay to read those things and for entertainment purposes, if you know, for lack of better words. And one of the things I really don't like about what ufology is kind of shaping into recently is I go to all these conferences in the last couple of years, you know, whether they're big international ones or they're local ones, and they're still talking about Roswell. They're still talking about government conspiracies. They're still talking about these cases from the 40s and 50s. That's great, but we need to move forward because, you know, just in the year alone, there's been, you know, hundreds and perhaps even thousands of reports with better evidence, with better witnesses. And that's what I'm shaping my investigators to investigate.
Right. I mean, the government can't keep a secret for 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
How are they going to keep one for 60?
Please, they can't keep it for 10 minutes.
You know, a good example that we really don't entertain the cold cases, but two months ago, we completed the San Agustin investigation out in New Mexico, and that was the same week of the Roswell incident. The alleged story is that multiple UFOs crashed in the area that same week, you know, out in Roswell, out in Corona, and one allegedly out in San Agustin, the one you rarely hear about. So, the witness sent us, you know, a FedEx of pieces of metal that he alleges was from the crashed UFO. And kind of an analysis of that metal, you know, from one of his scientists, we kind of discarded the analysis because we couldn't really determine the chain of custody, you know. Because the guy had the piece of metal and he was, you know, taking it around for almost a decade to different conferences. People handling it. We quickly discarded the metal. But when we went out there and we researched for almost 3 months straight, and one of my researchers, Jude, out of Idaho, we did the research and we were kind of leaning towards it was an actual aircraft that crashed out there. And we found the Air Force reports. We found the Air Force manuals that identified the piece of metal that we found out there, even some of the symbols that we found on the metal. So, and then we went out there and did the dig and did the actual forensics. And we're pretty 99% sure what crashed out there was an AT-6 aircraft. And, you know, when an aircraft crashes out there in the middle of the desert, and then 60, 70 years pass by, and then you have local lore, legends, and things like that about UFOs, that tends to muddle the story. And the community, we sent this out to the community, and they feel pretty comfortable that it was an airplane that crashed and not a UFO.
Okay. And John in the chat room says, the dog howling again, do you think these UFO abduction experiences have anything to do with DMT and the production of it during dream states?
You know, when we first started, I kind of was staying away from the abduction claims because when I did do those initially, I quickly realized that these that a lot of these abductees or alleged abductees needed you know psychiatric help.
Not
that they were
jobs.
Crazy. Yeah, not that they were nuts or crazy, but the way that they spoke to me, the recurring nightmares, some even suicidal and things like that, I quickly stepped away and said, "Whoa, I am not a psychiatrist. This is not something that I could do." So I networked. I found people in the area that did do that kind of stuff. And even the doctors that I talked about, they talked about sleep paralysis and all kinds of things.
Right.
That could attribute to these things. But on occasion, we do open area, you know, abduction cases when we do have a credible witness and we have maybe some type of physical evidence, you know. And so Ray out of Jersey, who's my abductee investigator, has come across a couple of cool cases where the witness allegedly has some type of piece of metal, in his leg, and we've got some x-rays on that. Multiple witnesses reporting things like, you know, loss of time, nightmares, the dual abductees and things like that. So we do get those cases once in a while, and we investigate them until a point where we think that they need to go see some type of mental health specialist.
Okay. Yeah, that's that's probably my line of thinking as well.
Yeah, they are interesting. I'm not a doctor to say that they're crazy or they're not crazy.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
I sit down with some of these guys and or gals, and I can in some cases I can truly sense they're telling the truth. They're not trying to hoax or pull my leg, and so I sympathize with them. But I do at a certain point in the case. I just don't dump them and say, okay, we're done. I do tend to network with people in the area that specialize in alien abductions, and then we'll just kind of pass the case on to them.
Okay. So anything in the works right now? Any cases you're working on?
We've got several cases open right now, and they're really minor. And that's what really makes – even when you meet their criteria that I told you – I'd say about 88 to 90% of the cases that we have open right now are usually probably some type of satellite in orbit, a combination of lens flares and just out of focus things. And we really have an interesting case now out of Mount Airy, which is in the Frederick Mountain area. Very credible witness, multiple witnesses, a great sighting. It's case 13-020. It's on my website. And the lady said that she was driving out to, I believe it was Oklahoma, just a couple months ago, and saw an object that was just huge. It was a huge cylinder, didn't make any noise. And it was such an interesting case that even MUFON reached out to me and kind of wanted a synopsis of the case because they feel that they're going to present that at the symposium here in a couple weeks. So really interesting case. We went out there. Roger and Paul are the lead investigators for this case, and they're doing a great work. They reached out to, you name it, every local agency you can think of from federal state to try to determine what this thing is. And at this point, it's likely we're going to either close it as unidentified because we're starting to, all loose ends are starting to close.
Right. All right. So, John, again. If the ETs are so much more advanced than us and can cross billions of light years of space, why would they visit us and not make themselves known? I said the prime directive.
Excellent question. And, I don't know if you've been watching my tweets recently, but I'm also coming up with an organization called the Center for Planetary Science.
Yep.
And as a planetary scientist, and, I studied astrophysics, orbital mechanics, rocket propulsion theories and things like that. And it's just not that for multiple alleged entities, because if you look at the ufology from a bigger perspective,
the different types of aliens.
People will say there's hundreds of species out there,
right,
that allegedly visit us from either time travel, interdimensional portholes, light speed, warp speed, you name it, but they come here and they don't make themselves known, at least in a bigger, perspective. Someone even told me the other day that, hey, You know, these guys allegedly have been visiting us for millions of years, abducting millions, perhaps, you know, of humans for experimentation. At what point will they actually finish their thesis or their experiment, you know? And he brought that, he made that analogy with, you know, our missions to Mars and the moon. You know, we went to the moon for 1 week, we were done, and goodbye. And these guys allegedly are traveling millions of years, millions of light years, or wherever they're coming from, if they're traveling in that type of propulsion system. Right. And, you know, they don't show themselves. What is their agenda if they do exist? What is with all the experimentations? And more importantly, why are they showing up here and crashing, you know? And
they came all this way just to crash.
They came all this way to crash. And then, you know, I don't get it, you know. But, you know, even jokes aside, I think there is something going on. I don't think every report is something extraterrestrial. But when you have, you know, the last, 75 years at least since we've been physically investigating these things.
Right.
There's probably been perhaps hundreds of thousands of reports. Now, right. If you just take 1% of those things, you've got maybe a couple of thousand reports of truly unidentified aircraft or objects that we can, you know, probably say it's not man-made, but who knows? It could be. I've had people tell me, "Oh, it's not even extraterrestrials. It's humans from the future, you know, checking up on us." So the door is still wide open. You know, I'm not leaning towards we're all crazy and everything's man-made or we have extraterrestrial visitation. I can't make that conclusion because I don't have any evidence to lean either way.
Yep. There was a great quote from Harlan Ellison, and one of the things that he said when he was asked about you know, alien abduction and anal probing, and he was like, "Look, a human doctor learns everything there is to know about the human ass in 8 years. What are these guys? Are they retarded? They've been at it for like 50.
Yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't changed. All right, so there's a couple of questions in the chat room.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
All right. So what do you think of the recent Belgium wave of sightings by police and military? And do you think the way they're handling the UFO sightings in Belgium by using scientists from the universities is a good idea?
I think part of the first question, that was an excellent, you know, wave of UFO sightings of the black triangles and things like that. I don't know what those were. I didn't investigate those things. I do read the blogs. I'd read everything from, hey, those are, you know, probably the black triangles are probably something man-made. There was even a report not too long ago that one guy came out and said that he actually hoaxed it. I don't know how far that went. And hey, what's up?
All right, I think we're back.
Oh, man! Since you mentioned UFOs, NSA triggers everything.
That's right. They just knocked us down.
Puckwudgies.
I don't
They're
believe it.
Actually, the last time... Oops.
What's that?
That's the radio station.
Okay. Puckwudgies.
Interesting.
All right.
All right, let's
turn the volume up here.
Not quite little green men, but sort of.
Hopefully nothing else happens.
Oh, I don't know. We're having some weather, too, so.
All right. So I think we're back. Sorry about that, folks. Just my laptop here blue screened, and it took me a while to get it back up and running.
The aliens are intercepting.
That's right.
We better get the tinfoil hats.
All right, so let's see. Where were we? We were talking about Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
Belgium, yeah, I totally agree with bringing the scientific community into not just the Belgium case, but any type of UFO case. Right. Unfortunately, what I quickly learned is that most mainstream scientists from any type of branch will typically stay away from UFOs because it'll be destructive to their careers. Mm. And any
so hopes you can't of recreate it in a lab.
Exactly.
Just like ghosts, you know, what we do, the paranormal investigation.
Yeah, but you know what I also quickly learned is that a lot of scientists are closet UFO believers. Mm-hmm. You know, I've met a lot of them at different conferences where, yeah, we stay away from this, but hey, I believe.
In public.
You know.
It's their dirty little secret.
Exactly.
But so I want to ask you, like this year, 2013, significant astrologically... Or did I say that right? Astronomically?
Astrological? I don't know.
Astrology is I don't even know if that's a science.
Really? Because, like, you know, we've had a lot of planetary alignments and...
That's actually, astronomy.
Astronomy. Thank you. I knew it was an A
That's
word.
That's astronomy. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, from an... Okay. Yeah. Okay. From an... Well, what's the word then?
Astronomy.
Astronomy? Astronomers?
Astronomical?
That's what I said, isn't it?
Astronomical.
Astronomical. Have you had more reports and stuff? I mean, because, you know, there's a lot of hubbub about that out there, too, that this year with the planetary alignments and all that stuff. And actually,
yeah.
Supermoon. Supermoon's coming up.
It was kind of quiet at the beginning of the year, but we did see a spike of reports in June. Normally we tend to get about, you know, we get a lot of reports, but we tend to maybe open 3 or 4 per month.
Mm-hmm.
And just June alone, we probably opened 15 to 20 cases. Now, that doesn't mean that the aliens are visiting us more in June, or that has nothing to do with that. We have to analyze the data. That could just mean, hey, the summer's here. There's more people out there,
outside,
you know, camping
yeah.
or visiting the mountains. So we have to be careful when people say, oh my God, 2013 was the spike of UFOs. And you tend to see that a lot in a lot of UFO, you know, websites out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes look at that and say, wait a minute, is there a spike in UFOs or does this state have more reportings because of population than this state? You know, you look at California that gets hundreds of cases per month and Maryland only gets 10 or 12 a month. That doesn't mean that the aliens are visiting California more. It's just that the population there is seeing.
Well, they've seen the Arnold Schwarzenegger commercial, you know,
and they
to California.
And of course they want to go to Hollywood.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, for some reason, you know, I always wait a month or two to analyze data that, you know, previous data because the data is still coming in for June.
Mm-hmm.
The types of cases are all over the place. They're not just one type of case. I've got objects. I've got UFOs. I've got alien abductions. I've got lights in the sky. I've got, believe it or not, blue aliens
Antonio.
Coming out of power lines. You
Antonio,
name it.
Hold on one yes, second.
What's the matter? Okay.
Well, it says it's playing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. Somebody in the chat room was saying that they're not getting the stream, but as far as I can tell, it's streaming fine.
Mm. Oh, I don't know.
Maybe
we'll
they got to refresh.
Okay. Yeah, right. You had to refresh.
So go on. You were saying
that, you know, from an analysis perspective, it's always better to wait till more reports come in before you make a quick judgment on what's going on, and that's what we're doing. But June seems to be a pretty good caseload for us,
mm-hmm.
and probably July as well. And then sometimes during the winter, it starts to slow down for a reason, for multiple reasons.
But that makes sense, what you said, like the warm weather in a lot more of the country,
and
more people outside.
Yeah. And it's just not that. You can go back and do this for decades, you know. I did, as a MUFON investigator too, I went in and analyzed the data for the last 25 years. And there's a cool little chart that I made, you know, from the early 1990s, there was 900 maybe so reports per year. And the graph goes continually up till the present time to the thousands of reports per year. Again, that doesn't mean that, you know, the aliens are visiting us more now. It just probably means that the use of the internet has increased. The use of mobile technology, phones, cameras has increased. Population has increased. The reporting mechanisms have improved. So there are more reports now than there were 25 years ago. And
right.
You got to look at it from that perspective. Or I could be wrong. Maybe the aliens are visiting more. I don't know.
Yeah.
Can you put them louder?
I can't. I don't know why all of a sudden the volume is messed up. It's going out over the air just fine. It's just in here we're having
really
a little
hard
time hearing you.
I've got people tweeting me and texting me that they can hear me fine.
Yeah, I do too.
So
it's just here.
Antonio, now how about all this biblical references?
That's pretty cool too.
That kind of wild? And then there's like cave drawings and stuff and all. Do you guys look into stuff like that?
I don't. Well, I do from a personal, you know, from personally, I like to read that kind of stuff just to you know, see what was being reported back then, if there was any type of reports. And you got to take that, a lot of the biblical stuff from with a grain of salt. Not that they're lying or the, you know, Isaacle and those.
No, but a lot of natural phenomenon.
It could be. It could be a combination of exaggeration, and that's, you know, the Bible tends to, you know, elaborate a lot on certain subjects. Really, not that I am endorsing debunking on any of that stuff, but I actually watched a cool video on YouTube the other day by a guy who, I guess he has a science background, and was not debunking, but his perspective on what everything on that show, Ancient Aliens, talks about from the pyramids.
Oh my God, Ancient Aliens! Have you ever met that guy with the hair?
I met him last
year. Oh, I so want to meet him. What is his name?
He's
Greek,
I like
right?
Him, but you got to remember, for every UFO investigator out there, just like somebody that hates
again?
Him. And thinks he's a fraud, just like people think I'm a fraud. But
I don't think you're a fraud.
You know, I really like the ancient
people
alien stuff.
Call people, you know, frauds unless they have a lot of proof that you're a fraud.
Yeah, yeah. But
that's,
it's cool.
True.
I don't know. I look at some of these paintings. I look at some of these scriptures in the Bible, and they talk about, you know, machines and metal spirals from space, and entities. The word entity.
Ezekiel saw the wheel?
Yeah, so
right?
I don't know what that is, but I guess anything that was not identified back then was also, I guess, from, you know, unidentified or, but it's cool. I don't know. There's even a book out there, I don't know the name offhand, that Christopher Columbus, on his way to the Americas, saw a UFO, and he described it as a large cylinder over the horizon, so I thought that was pretty neat too.
Yeah. There's a lot of references in history.
Sure. The datings go back decades, but, you know, I am that guy that, oh yeah, great story, but I still need that physical proof, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not debunking it. I'm not saying it didn't exist or that,
but
you know,
you have nothing tangible to prove.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I'm not.
It could have been an interpretation. Of something,
yeah, it's,
of a natural,
you know,
phenomenon.
You got to look at the subject from, you know, other perspectives. I'll bring in other things in cryptozoology. Bigfoot. Decades of sightings, and there's still no proof. You know, leprechauns.
No, I believe in Bigfoot.
Decades of sightings, and there's still no proof of leprechauns. You know, mermaids, you name it. The list
puck-wudgies.
Goes on.
There we go with the puck-wudgies again.
The list goes on, and unfortunately,
what if Bigfoot's an alien?
That's where UFOs fell into. They fell into that little corner at the bookstore or the library called New Age or Fringe Science or the paranormal. And you know, hopefully, maybe not in my lifetime, but the UFO book can maybe be placed in the science section in the future.
Yeah.
Well, you got to have that tangible, reproducible
evidence.
You
know, That's my goal. I'm not saying that UFO reports of UFOs are bogus or they don't exist or people are just nuts. I'm looking for that tangible proof, you know. And it doesn't have to be a piece of metal or a body of a dead alien, because there's been a lot of anecdotal evidence, you know.
Oh yeah, fakey stuff, skulls.
Yeah, but nobody's really brought it together.
Of aliens.
You know?
What's that crystal skull thing? Was that
the crystal skulls?
Yeah, you see, it's that's a good subject, because for one archaeologist to say, "Oh my God, this is aliens," and then you have another archaeologist say, "No, you know, people back then for rituals expanded their heads and things like that, the Mayans, etc." And so, for every argument, there's a counter argument in this field, and I think that's like that in any field, and. You know, and it's cool. And what's funny is because that's the way my team is. I have a team, half skeptics and half believers, and a couple in the middle, and they make for a great team when investigating. But at the end of the day, whether you're a skeptic or a believer, we still don't have tangible proof.
Right. Donna thinks it's people from the future.
Field trips.
Going back to see how us ancients. I had a question, but she just blew it out of my head. there's one from Jude. What about the alleged deaths that happened on the coast of South America that was said to be aliens?
When was that?
Yeah, you'd have to tell me a little bit more about that, because there's probably a million.
Yeah, that's all that's there.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I like what the funny part is. I must get bombarded about 300 emails a week, and people think, you know, that I'm like constantly on the internet and I'm reading every single report that comes out, because they come out by the thousands. Literally every week, that, you know, whether you're on Above Top Secret or YouTube or, you know, bestufovideos.com, there are thousands per week of tweets, of Facebook postings, and I would go crazy, you know, if I try to, you know, but hey, if anybody has a serious question and they want me to look into it, yeah, I'll totally look into this South American,
That was Jude.
That's, yeah, mm-hmm. So I'll take a look at that. It's tough, you know. I have two jobs, full time jobs. I have the Aerial Phenomena Investigation Team. I have the Center for Planetary Science, you know, among other things. Scuba diving, and then I gotta leave.
Oh, you're a scuba diver?
Yeah,
scuba diver.
I dive. So there's something else we have in common.
Yeah.
Hey, what's your think on aliens under the ocean?
USO.
I'm actually planning a trip to Puerto Rico, and I'm shooting hopefully for November. There's a guy out there called he's in charge of the Puerto Rico UFO network. And his name is Jose, and he's been sending me pretty good reports of UFOs coming out of not only the lakes out in Puerto Rico, but also out in the Atlantic. And that's something I'm very interested in, and we hope to do an expedition out there like we did this year in New Mexico, out to Puerto Rico.
That's cool.
To see what's out there. The guy is a retired Special Forces guy, currently a police officer. So,
no BS kind of guy.
Yeah, so he reached out to me and told me, hey, I got this cool stuff that I want you to look at. So I'm interested in, because Puerto Rico seems to be a vortex or something out there that really brings, you know, there's a lot of UFO reports out there.
Arecibo.
Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, well, you name it, from the Bermuda Triangle, the islands outside of Puerto Rico, Vieques, etc., and even up in the El Yunque, the big mountain that's up there. But I got to be careful out there, because I know there's also classified work that's been going out there up in El Yunque.
Well, actually, it's been 45 minutes.
We got to take a break.
Break!
So, yeah. So why don't we take we'll take a quick break, and all right, here we're gonna play some UFO.
Oh, cool.
No.
Yeah.
Too hot!
And we're back. There's some old heavy metal from the 70s. Gotta love UFO. Great band.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Schenker on guitar.
UFO.
Yeah.
UFO.
So we were talking off air, and you had a case recently that was kind of a crossover between our two fields. So you had something UFO or related with paranormal. And
yeah,
that's what we get
pretty.
Into.
Some on occasion we get cases that cross over between UFOs and I guess the paranormal. And this case was out of Omaha, Nebraska, about a year, I think almost a year now. So the ghost hunter out in Nebraska was doing some ghost hunting in his home. And the home was a former funeral home or funeral parlor, whatever you want to call it. So he was out there with his wife, and I believe one of his kids out there with all their, you know, paranormal gadgets and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they allegedly saw what appeared to be a blue UFO, an actual object with metal, hovering outside the window. And so they went out there and it was gone, of course. And as they were, I guess, doing their EMF sweeps inside their one of the rooms and taking photography with their, it wasn't thermals. So they took a picture of what appeared to look like a one of your typical grays. You really have to look at it carefully. It can lean towards pareidolia if you're a skeptic or debunker. And I was leaning towards that way for a second. I was like, okay, I see maybe two eyes and a big head. And he said, well, that's not all. We actually recorded an EVP. And he said it to me, and I totally couldn't understand what it was saying. I mean, it was saying blah, blah, blah. And so I said, okay, I'm going to send this out to my buddies out in London. I got a cool network out there with the London paranormal team. And they came back to me and said, hey, Antonio, that is demonic. And so I was like, okay, I'm not a demon hunter. And I passed on the case to a couple of different groups out there, including Kansas Paranormal. And they also came to the conclusion that it was a demonic EVP. So I thought that was a pretty cool case, you know, from two angles. A UFO researcher, excuse me, a paranormal hunter out there caught an alleged photo of a entity that looks like your typical gray.
Mm-hmm.
And it was speaking in some type of demonic, you know, tones. And the second part is that it's cool to network with other types of organizations out there so that when you do cross that line of beyond your investigative skills, you can network it and pass it on to someone else that can assist in the case. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Right.
It's important not to compete with other organizations. It's important not to, you know, stab others in the back.
Our unity, baby.
Yeah, you know, I network with all the organizations out there, whether it's New Fork, MUFON, the guys out in Britain, you name it. This is not, Antonio is not looking for a TV show. Antonio is not looking for a movie deal.
yep.
I don't have time for any of that
Antonio
crap. And more
again.
Importantly, I think I get my job right now pays a lot more than any of that.
Right.
I'm here to educate the world about UFOs and maybe perhaps in the future, find some type of evidence, and then as I get older, pass the baton to someone else.
I am so proud you said that, because we say that all the time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah, sure. I get a lot of those.
Everyone looks at those shows on TV, and they lose the science end of it, and they don't understand.
Yeah, I've done a couple of shows, you know, and I've done them for pro bono. I told them, hey, I don't want to get paid. I'll be a host, you know, for a couple of those alien shows, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty cool. And they've asked me, hey, would you do this full time? And I'm like, no. You know, if you need some type of consulting, I'm totally there to help. But that's not what I want to do. And then I quickly, you know, people who tend to make that switch from true investigations to trying to be on TV, they become actors. They don't really become investigators anymore.
Yeah, I'm not down with that.
No. We actually kicked somebody out of out of our group because they kept saying, "When are we getting a show? When are we getting a show?" And it was like, "Not about the show."
If it's meant to be, they'll come out and get you. You know,
as soon as I get to be 5'6" and 120 pounds, That's when we get the show.
Yeah, okay. Miss 5'2".
We do not want to discuss my weight.
I didn't. Okay. I didn't discuss weight at all. So
I'm a perfect size 4.
Cute. Oh, perfect.
Yeah. No. Oh, boy. Yeah, we're going downhill already. Still early in the show.
Yes, I do it again.
Oh, God, where was I going to go? You keep knocking questions out of my head.
The knockers.
The knockers, yeah, the knockers. yeah, we were talking off air about the Bridgewater Triangle.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll have to look it up because it's pretty much like paranormal everything. There's been UFO sightings, Bigfoot sightings, ghosts,
giant
goblins,
snakes.
Giant snakes,
big,
devil
giant dogs.
Bigfoot.
That sounds almost like, what do you call that place out there? Utah, the Skinwalker Ranch.
Puckwudgies.
Yeah, like Skinwalker Ranch.
Puckwudgies.
Puckwudgies. Yeah. You know what a puckwudgie is? I know because Donna keeps saying it.
I love puckwudgies.
I don't really.
I don't want to take them home.
I'm literally like Googling it right now. A puckwudgie.
PUKWUDGIE.
Yes. Puckwudgie.
It's a Native American. Native American
spirit.
Well, it's basically a leprechaun. Native American leprechaun.
Yeah, it looks like
say that to a Native American. They'll scalp you.
Well, whatever.
This one's got a bow and arrow. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they're protector spirits.
They're little. They're
and they can be nice or not so much.
If you mess with them, they'll mess back. If you leave them alone, they'll leave you alone,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Well, basically, if you respect the land and you don't do any harm to the land, they're like protectors.
Yeah. So.
So has anybody found the puckwudgie yet?
We've had. Well, they run around here all the time. I'm telling you. And yet they're worse than roaches to get rid of. No, for real. Up here, around here, there's a lot of history, obviously, and a lot of bad stuff that happened in the past, and, yeah, bigger.
Yep. We're, right,
I'm getting a look, so I'll be quiet.
Yeah, well, because we're talking UFOs,
not
puckwudgies.
I know,
puckwudgies.
I love puckwudgies.
But we are, our house is about 2 miles from the place where King Philip's War actually started, and, so we get a lot of that stuff around here.
Yeah, I'm telling you, even if you follow UFOs out of the whole, perspective, there's a lot of crazy stuff that's going on here. I mean, there's organizations for everything, investigating from Bigfoots to leprechauns, you name it.
Yep.
So the subject is not dry, you know. I wish I could do that all, but I can't. I'm not, I guess, what's that show? Destination Truth that, I like to show. They kind of investigate everything, but I kind of found my little niche in UFOs.
Yeah, Josh Gates. Yeah.
He rocks.
And also, Ben Hansen with...
he rocks.
Yeah. and Bill.
Yeah, Bill Murphy.
Bill
Murphy's the man.
I'm sorry. I love those guys.
Tone it down a little, will you?
All right, I'm sorry.
Simmer down, Beavis. Yeah, I've had Ben on, and I've had Bill on about 4 or 5 times now. I love having Bill on because we don't talk about anything. We just basically just shoot the shit for 2 hours.
Well, since the show is called Equipped, what's some of your
What kind of gear do you use?
Yeah.
For investigating?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is cool. So there's a difference between, I guess. You guys are actively, in the paranormal community, you're actively, I guess, investigating and searching for UFOs. Paranormal.
Right.
Whereas when it comes to UFOs, it's always post-investigation. It's I saw something and it was, last week or 10 years ago. So the event already happened. It's almost like a crime scene. And so we have a wide array of tools for those type of post-investigations. Everything from Geiger counters, EMF detectors, you name it. And then on occasion, when we get those reports, oh, my God, I know UFO is going to show up here at 8 o'clock because it showed up, every Monday at 8 o'clock. We have the typical, thermals, night vision goggles, night vision lenses for the cannons, mm-hmm. The infrared, and we'll place those up. I tend to usually connect those to the, you know, instead of actively being out there, we'll hook those up to the laptops or to our iPads and things like that and go inside the tent and things like that. But again, you know, most of the stuff we get during active investigations tends to be some type of spacecraft in orbit. We really haven't caught anything unusual. On occasion, we do go out to a post-investigation and sometimes get, you know, a little tick on the Geiger counter. But normally we'll attribute that to maybe, you know, cosmic radiation or something.
Or just background.
Because the reading is not consistent. You know, it'll come and go and things like that. So, you know, we've done several hundred investigations by now. You know, we know the equipment works. We test it every time before we go out. I'll tell you what, what's interesting is when we were out in New Mexico, I thought this was funny. We do our PCI before I leave. That means a complete equipment check, just like you guys. Batteries are charged. We make sure we turn them on. Everything's working. Plenty of film, plenty of memory on the cards. So I go out, we go out to the site in New Mexico and batteries are dead and the metal detectors won't work and things just start falling apart little by little. And we're like, okay, what's really going on here? And I thought that was strange, but we replaced the batteries as quickly as they failed, and then everything just worked, you know. But I couldn't explain. Okay, so everything pretty much worked, and it's a 40-minute drive maybe to the site, and then, you know, one-third of the equipment begins to fail. I thought that was pretty interesting. Yeah. Not that it was paranormal or something out there, but I thought it was pretty cool.
Okay.
You know, battery
the lesson drain. Learned is, the lesson learned in that situation is, is redundancy. Always bring two of every. I have two cameras. I have two Geiger counters. I have two EMFs. I have two night vision goggles, two metal detectors, plenty of batteries for everything. Because, like, you know, like they say, when you least expect it, Murphy's Law will kick in and everything will just break and fail.
Yep.
Bill Murphy's Law. It'll break. I got a question. What about, and I don't know, because they relate these to aliens all the time, and I think it's a bunch of people hoaxing, but the crop circle thing.
Yeah, I think it's hoaxes.
What do you think
about that? I think most of that is explained as hoax, not just hoaxes, but it's graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
There are one or two videos out there of, you know, a strange orb or something in some crop field out in the UK making some back and forth movement and you can allegedly see the crop circle being made there.
Yeah.
I looked at that video
and the first thing that I thought was somebody messed with it digitally.
Yeah, you know, and I don't really like to chase those kind of stories. There's a Jennifer Stein out here, she's out of Pennsylvania, and you guys can Google her. Jennifer Stein is like one of the world's experts in crop circles, and she has an awesome presentation on you know, how natural phenomena can cause some of these, not all of them, because some of them are very elaborate, crop circles of Obama's image or something like that. But she has a really good presentation on electrostatic fields and how they cause some of these crop circles. But I think I lean towards what she believes. A lot of it is, it's just graffiti. But then there are those, just like UFOs, there's one or two cases out there that could be a hoax, but are kind of interesting. So, but I've had maybe two crop circle cases out here in Maryland, one in Maryland, one in Virginia. But interviews with the homeowners, quickly debunked them, and it was the homeowner of farming equipment that actually did it, but not the, but it was an aliens. Sadly.
How is John in the chat room?
John's just talking about where he's from.
Oh.
There's actually a bunch of people in the chat room, so it's a lot of good conversation going on. John actually asks, do you think an advanced race would be advanced enough to get around our primitive technologies?
Yeah, sure. If there is an advanced race out there, totally, yeah. You know, people will, you know, I couldn't even envision what an advanced race would look like. When I think of a clunky flying saucer You know, I don't think of that as advanced. Something like that, even if it comes from a mothership, it's not something that could withstand, you know, gravity and anything from radiation, you know, that's coming from millions of light years away. I always use the, I guess the analogy is apple pie. You know, apple pie is something that us human beings on this planet invented, just like we invented the iPhone, the calendar, Mac.
Hot dogs.
Hot dogs. All that
stuff. I love hot dogs.
And even our perception of what aliens would look like is something that we as a human race actually invented in our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And I always argue that with myself. Wait a minute. If aliens exist, and if they can travel, and if they use interdimensional, you know, travel, spacecraft, math, science, all the things that we invented in human race, then it, logically you can argue that, hey, aliens also invented apple pie and the iPhone, mm-hmm. and et cetera.
I think I'm telling you, it's us on field trips.
Yeah.
In the future.
So I can't envision, I can't, because when I think of your typical alien, which is it looks human, two arms, two legs, a head, that's something that really was derived from, you know, the gravity in our planet, something, you know, even the two eyes and the nose,
yep.
and ears. And there would have to be a planet somewhere out there in the universe or in some solar system that had pretty much the same type of gravity, same type of atmospheres, you name it, et cetera, for them to evolve just like what we do, what we look like. Now, there are people that say out there, well, if you look at the grays and the big heads and the skinny legs, that's something what a typical space travel would look like after eons of travel, because of, you know, space radiation, space sickness, etc. You know, people are entertaining that thought that the grays are actually, or any of those type of aliens are actually humans from the future.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I don't know. I like to entertain that thought, though.
Yeah, I do, too. You know, I did some studies. I actually wrote a paper in grad school, and it was titled For the President, and it was the psychological and physiological aspects of space travel for long-duration interstellar travel. And there's so many things, and space is very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
And even getting from here to Mars is become something, you know, an impossible feat. And I think half the spacecraft that we launch out there don't actually get there. But, you know, when you look at it physiologically, there's space syndrome. If you're out there for too long, and if you can Google this, the NASA does studies of the astronauts.
Atrophy.
Their heads begin to grow.
Atrophy. Yeah.
You know, as the fluids, you know, because there's no gravity, the fluids tend to move up into the body. So you get the chicken leg syndrome,
yep.
The big puffy head.
The spindly.
And I think there was a study recently that if you're out in space for too long, your eyes become black. So if you put all that together, you know, you're looking at your typical alien.
Right.
And that's probably a condition based on too much time in space.
Right.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Then there's also the...
I like that.
You know, the typical gray alien... the first time it's reported, you know, is basically, you know, Roswell. But then you have, you know, the Betty and Barney Hill case.
New Hampshire.
Yep, in New Hampshire. And, you know, the abduction case. Now, they had lots of lost time and stuff like that. But, you know, under hypnosis, who knows what you're going to say. But the other thing is that Betty also said that she had watched a movie a couple of weeks before that, you know, the incident happened.
Yeah.
And that movie had the typical gray alien in it, and she even said that it gave her nightmares.
Yeah, I had a case like that. I had a recent case where the lady was telling me, I've been having these nightmares and things like that, and she admitted, but they only happened after I saw the movie The Fourth Kind.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay, so you didn't have any abduction experiences until you saw this crazy, scary movie.
Crazy, scary, fake movie. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you know, when you look at, I guess, your typical gray, there is so many. I guess there would be more than one species, because if you go on the internet,
right.
on a lot of these websites, they all look different.
Yep.
All these grays, and I did a pretty cool test once with my own team. So I was giving them a presentation, and I snuck in a quick video of a flying saucer. It was only for about 3 to 5 seconds. And they were like, "Oh, that's funny." And an hour later, I said, "Hey, remember that flying saucer I showed you? I want you guys to draw that for me." And I had 12 investigators draw me 12 different sketches. Mm-hmm. And I quickly told them, listen, there's a difference between seeing and observing. And this is what I want to train you at, is that five different people could see the same UFO, and 5 minutes later, they'll draw you five different sketches.
Mm-hmm.
And, and because of the brain functions differently for each person, and they want to draw what they think they saw.
And it's their own interpretation, too.
Yeah, it's their own truth. So you got to be careful with
and what they bring
sketches.
To them.
That's why I always lean towards good photos and good video.
Hmm.
Yep.
What's your... are we go? Am I?
Yeah,
like,
actually, we need to go to a break again.
Who knew I wanted to ask this many questions about aliens?
Nobody.
I find it interesting.
Oh, so do I. But you're not letting me get a chance.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And every time I have a question, you knock it out of my head. All right. So how about a little space hog? That's always a good one.
Let's do it.
We'll be right back.
And we're back. Yeah, great song.
Space Hog.
Yep.
Love Space Hog.
And the name of the album is Resident Alien, just in case. Yeah. So, you know, talking about all the different types of aliens and you know, beings or whatever you want to call them, entities. Have you ever messed around with the Drake equation?
Yeah, totally. You know,
that's
obviously the quickest way to, you know, to summarize that is that technically there would be millions, you know, of not only extraterrestrial, or, you know, entities out there, but or civilizations, but intelligent life out there.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, but I really like, there's a book called Where Is Everybody? Mm-hmm. And that is kind of the counter argument to the Drake equation, that if there was millions of intelligent civilizations out there, and some of these could be spacefaring civilizations, then why is it so quiet? Where you know, where's the noise? Where's the actual signals, you know, or the communications and things like that study you're looking for?
Could they be just that far away, though?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing.
They could be. I mean, the universe is pretty big. We really don't know how big it is. We can see only the observable universe out to, you know, 13.7 billion light years out there. And that's as far as we can see, because the universe is moving at the speed of light away from us. So we'll never really be able to catch up to it, whether it's infinite or not.
I think it's just kind of arrogant for man to think they're the only intelligent life form.
Yeah, I think that's arrogant. No, as a planetary scientist, I know there has to be something out there. You know, I look at all these exoplanets coming out, and, you know, and all the galaxies that are out there with probably habitable planets. There has to be something out there. But the question is, if it's something that is out there, is it intelligent enough to raise to the occasion like we did to build, you know, technologies that can take us outside the atmosphere? That's a whole different story.
Right.
Who knows?
Right.
Intelligent life, you know, at a different planet could be some slime that's still in a cave and not necessarily something that invented the iPhone like we did.
Right.
I get visions of the Blob. That movie scared me as a kid.
I love that movie. That's so classic.
I love that movie too.
Oh. Not the old one, the original.
Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen.
I don't envision the
remake. The remake sucked.
The old one with Steve McQueen is the best one.
That's the best one.
Yeah. So when you look at, you know, when people say extraterrestrial life, they automatically assume little green men in their silver suits coming from far distances and coming to Earth to abduct us for no reason whatsoever. Who knows? Maybe what's out there is actually just a piece of slime on some rock that has no clue what's going on around them. Or I could be wrong. There could be intelligent life out there that has visited us in the past, or perhaps still in the present, and just hasn't made itself, to make itself known as important as we want it to be.
What if they're already here and running the show?
Oh, now we're talking, what's that movie with the, They're Here or something like that?
Rodney Piper,
They Live.
Yeah.
They Live.
That
movie rocked.
Roddy Piper, that's one of the greatest fight scenes ever.
It could be. You know, I don't investigate conspiracies, but I've heard it all. I've heard from They're Here, they walk among us, they collaborate with governments, they collaborate with defense contractors. They're being held
children.
At the Dulce base up in Colorado, New Mexico. They're at Area 51. They're at various installations throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, at free will, and sometimes not at free will.
Right.
But you know, I don't know where to think about that, because I don't see them. A lot of it, that's just, you know, imagination, fringe science. And I don't think
it's pretty cool though.
It's cool to think about that. You know, I went out to the so-called secret Dulce base, you know, about 6 weeks ago, and I thought it was pretty cool. I was out there. We had our night vision, everything set up, you know, waiting for something to come out of the secret UFO base, but nothing came out, of course. So.
Right. Jude said, you know, if there are literally millions of planets, many have to be much more older than us. And that, you know, that comes along with what Carl Sagan had said, why he didn't think aliens were visiting the Earth, was because the universe is so huge and so old that either the extraterrestrials are either going to be millions of years ahead of us, in which case they wouldn't give a rat's ass what we're doing, or they're millions of years behind us.
It could be that. You got to look at that from an evolutionary process, mm-hmm. because it took, you know, the universe is 13.7 billion years old, roughly, but it took almost half of that for the Earth to evolve to the stage we're at now.
Right.
And if you use the same type of common sense, a lot of the planets that are out there, you know, if they're habitable planets, they too would take billions of years to evolve to a stage where the conditions were right for some type of intelligent life to evolve, not only to evolve, but also to not self-destruct, to actually survive mm-hmm. the evolutionary
right.
process.
Well, that's part of the Drake equation, too. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, who knows? Maybe a civilization made it just as far as we did, but bang, an asteroid took them out before they invented space travel.
Well, if you think about it, if the Earth hadn't been hit by a huge asteroid 65 million years ago, we might be smart dinosaurs.
Exactly, sure.
It'd be like that cartoon, remember that? The talking dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
Remember that? That was pretty cool in the 80s.
And who knows? Maybe, I've got a lot of friends that study this kind of thing from an anthropological perspective, geology, et cetera. And who knows? Maybe there is intelligent life out there, but they have not gotten the precipice, that point in their life where they became a technological civilization. And they could be still cavemen or octopus or things like that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe at one point a civilization did become spacefaring, and they're still out there. You know, the closest galaxy, you know, Andromeda, it'll take millions of years for us to travel to, you know,
right.
out there
at the current speed. I mean, we would have to get faster than light travel.
You'd have to develop a warp. Capacity.
Well, even at warp capacity, you know, if you look at even in Star Trek, you know, which is, you know, a series that goes further, you know, in distances than, you know, any other series, they never leave our galaxy.
Yeah.
They never leave
One thing I notice is when people talk about, the aliens must be traveling at the speed of light, but they always tend to skip the physics behind and the dangers of traveling the speed of light and Einstein physics and twin paradox and the Doppler effect for traveling at those speeds of light. The mainstream ufologists always tend to skip that kind of stuff.
Right.
They always come up with some type of counter argument. But I'm not saying that's not a possibility. Who knows what's out there? Who knows what's out there and what did they invent? And I kind of would probably lean towards more interdimensional travel rather than the interstellar travel, because interstellar travel is very dangerous. There's a lot of stuff out there that, you know, traveling at the speed of light,
a speck of dust traveling at 100,000 miles an hour will ruin your day.
It'll ruin your eye out. So if they're visiting us, I would probably lean towards more they might be using some type of other form of travel.
Yep.
Or they're already here and they never left.
Warp drive or some sort of gravitic.
I agree with you. Already here and never left.
Exactly.
Interdimensional.
Okay.
All right. I'm sorry.
We'll get David Rountree on and have that whole conversation.
That would rock.
What's cool is that we do know that at least, you know, some defense or, you know, the community out there are looking into these things. Not that it's feasible in the near future, but they are looking at things like, anti-gravity propulsion and different types of interstellar travel, you name it. So let's see, maybe 1,500 years from now.
All I can tell you is I want my flying car.
Okay? Yeah, what happened to the flying?
I was promised a flying car. I want it.
Possibly flying cars would be bad.
I think it would be bad.
It'd be pretty bad because, I mean, you look at the idiots on the road now.
I want a flying motorcycle.
You have two morons colliding. Where are they going to go?
That would be a lot of UFO reports.
I don't know. I want my flying car, damn it.
All right, I'll walk if you get a flying car.
And I want a flying motorcycle, too.
Somebody's posting questions about wormholes.
That's
a good theory. And it's a possibility, but from my understanding is wormholes are static. They're not dynamic. That once you create a wormhole, you theoretically, according to Einstein, you cannot put anything in it because it'll collapse it in itself.
There's actually I forget the scientist's name, but he's working on a way to open up a wormhole. Because the problem with the wormhole right now is that there's nothing at the other end to be like a receiver. You'd have to get something to the other end to be the receiver.
The Fly with the two.
No, because it's not a transporter.
Mm-hmm.
You're going through a tunnel.
You're going through a tunnel.
Yeah. So
like the movie Contact.
Yeah.
I didn't like that movie.
No. You don't like science fiction.
I do like science fiction.
No, you like science horror.
I specialize in science horror, but I like science fiction.
So yeah, that's it. Ronald Mallett. Anyways, that's what I was working on. The problem is that it takes, you know, an infinite amount of power,
right,
in order to keep it open.
Yeah, it's almost impossibility.
Right.
But as you go in a wormhole, there's no guarantee on how you're going to come out.
Yeah, who knows? You might come out, you know, in the Jurassic period, and you don't have a way back.
Or your ass might be on your face, which is not a good thing either.
That would not be cool.
We're not talking transparency here.
I don't know.
And we're also not talking black holes, which would be a whole different thing.
Yeah, black holes are...
You can't go into a black hole because it would just tear you to shreds.
It would tear you to shreds, yeah. Right. But a wormhole, there has to be some effect, though, on you, I would think.
Maybe. We haven't got one to test. But in theory, if you had a stable wormhole, it'd be like walking through it.
You fold it over areas in space with a tunnel through it.
Right, and you just basically just walk right through it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I still think there would be an effect on someone. Maybe like puke. I don't know. That falling thing in space.
Okay.
Like you feel like you're falling all the time. I would think, like, at least experience that. I don't know. Just a guess. I don't know. Do we have to take another break soon?
I was going to ask Antonio. You
I'm totally cool till 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was
going
to check.
Because
you said you might have to leave, so I was giving you the option.
But we're fun. Aren't we fun?
I've been given another 30 minutes.
How about that whole theory, Antonio, of aliens? Like, you know, you got the little greens and the little grays and stuff, but then there's another sect.
There's the
reptilians.
The reptilians,
and
there's also the insectoids.
Bugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a big fan of those.
I think I'd rather deal with a reptilian than a bug.
From blue aliens to reptilians, if extraterrestrials exist, I would say maybe there might be one, maybe two, you know, spacefaring civilizations that might have made it out. You know, we're a speck, you know, in the cosmic universe.
Yep.
And for millions or thousands of species to converge just into this planet for unknown reasons, just boggles the mind. And more importantly, you know, I'm more of a believer if extraterrestrials did find our planet, they're probably sending more like probes and droids and things like that than sending actual physical entities here. I would say maybe if they're visiting, it's maybe one or two. And I wouldn't go into the Encyclopedia of Aliens, which I have one, and there's literally thousands of so-called aliens.
There really is.
Even Fabio, there's even one that looks like Fabio, you know, from the planet.
Are you serious? There's a Fabio alien?
I always thought one that Fabio looks just like him.
I thought Michael Jackson was an alien.
Michael Jackson was an alien, so was Fabio.
Yeah. Oh, and okay. Al Roker, he's another one.
Al Roker?
Yeah. I don't know. Oprah.
Big Al.
I think Oprah's an alien.
Possibly.
Anyway. See, we have fun on this show.
That's what we need to do. I mean...
Yeah, you do. You do.
Investigations, it's serious, but you can't take it too serious. You gotta have a little fun. Mm-hmm. And I try to bring... If you look at my tweets or my Facebook, I try to bring humor to the subject. You know, and it's all about making people enjoy the subject.
Right.
I'm sure there's some hardcore ufologists out there. And even at my conferences and my book readings and book signings, I like to bring humor to the subject.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there are a handful of people that really take this really serious. And they'll walk out of the conference really pissed off and angry. Oh, my God, Antonio's debunking the reptilian race.
Right, and then they go back to their parents' basement.
And then they go back to their, you know, their armchair out in the basement.
In their parents' basement.
But I always bring, you know, I'm always bringing that debate to the table. Come on, let's talk about it. I don't necessarily like to push away anybody in this type of field.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just always that one or two that I really can't, you know, educate and bring them to... The real, you know, what real UFO investigations are, you know, you can't really just do them on the internet.
You can't fix stupid.
Not really stupid, I'd say more ignorant, you know.
Can't fix that either.
Yeah. All right, well, we have to take another break now then. So, I'm gonna, now that we're on the insectoids, how about Alien Ant Farm?
Oh, we'll talk about that when you get back.
And we're back. And, yeah, Jude, I was just reading your chat messages. And I was actually going to mention Story Musgrave, because he's very vocal about stuff that he's seen while on Apollo as well as space shuttle missions.
Oh, is that like, Russian dude?
Story Musgrave? No, he's
American. He's American.
He's American? Okay.
I knew Buzz Aldrin also said that he saw that.
He saw stuff.
Yeah, he said he saw stuff. I don't remember Neil Armstrong ever saying anything.
Yeah, I don't think Neil Armstrong ever said. There's allegedly that he saw something at the moon landing.
Right.
But Story and a couple other, you know, even Mitchell, do have reports, you know, of seeing stuff out there. And allegedly they were even warned not to land on the moon, but as credible as these guys are, and I totally believe what they're saying, there's no reason, I don't see an agenda for them of coming up with this stuff.
Yeah, well, you know what?
They did see something. They did see something.
You listen to Story Musgrave, though, and you're like going, yeah, wow, this guy is a little borderline, you know?
Well, how long was he up there?
Yeah.
He wasn't up there very long. I mean, he was shuttle missions.
Yeah. But then you got the arguments against that. You've got a lot of people, not I'm doing it, but you do have people that debunk that, saying, you know, astronauts up there start to see lights in the sky, in space, and starts to imagine. Some even said that some of the stuff they saw out there was Russian spacecraft, you know, out there doing their recon and all things like that. Those are the people that will debunk those stories. But, you know, I like Dr. Edgar Mitchell. I don't think Buzz Aldrin actually ever said something, but there are a handful of astronauts that have come forward. But at the end of the day, they came forward with only talk, no physical proof, and that's what I'm looking for.
All right, I got one for you. How about pilots?
Same thing with pilots. There's you gotta. When I look at a witness, I look more than just a title, mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of bad pilots out there. There's a lot of bad cops. There's a lot of bad military officers. There's a lot of bad astronauts. We had one that was, you know, going on a rampage with Pampers on because she was in love with some other astronaut. So you got to be careful with titles. People say a general said this, so it must have happened. You know, stuff like
well,
that.
Well, more and so with pilot. When I say with pilots, because they're flying.
Sure.
You know, and that's what I mean.
Yeah,
you
know I look at the stories, and I like it when a really good, credible pilot does see something. That was moving, you know, three or four or five times the speed of the aircraft, moving at incredible speeds and incredible angles that defy the laws of aeronautics. And I tend to lean towards, I believe, those guys. Mm-hmm. And then on occasion, maybe one out of a bazillion of these pilot sightings, you'll get like a blurry photo or something, and you really can't make it out. But if pilots are seeing stuff out there, there was a really famous case, I believe it was a Japanese pilot, a Japanese pilot, who said he saw something, and even some of the crew saw it, and it was the size of an aircraft carrier, you know, and so I thought that was a pretty cool case.
That ain't no moon.
No, totally not a moon.
Yeah, I'm still reading these, the chat room stuff.
Yeah, I like the chat rooms, and I like the comment about the psychological test, because anytime an astronaut, you know, anybody of some type of prestigious title wants to come forward with some type of report, even the media is quickly scrutinizes them and debunks them and character assassinates them. For what purposes, I don't know why, but, you know, when you have a pilot and
all right, I think we're back streaming. Let's try to get Antonio back on the line here.
That?
Not yet.
Okay, I'm back.
All right, there you are. And I think we're back. I gotta mess with the volume here. You're really low.
I don't know if it's weather or your computer.
I don't know. All right. I think that's it. You want try talking, Antonio?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, there we
go.
Wow, you're back. All right. I don't know what's going on. This hasn't happened in, like, months and months and months. And
aliens.
There's no doubt.
The last time it crashed was when we were talking about black-eyed children.
And he said, if you're in space, that's what I said before.
Yeah.
If you're in space for a while, what happens?
Your eyes turn black. Mm.
Eyes turn black, and they grow. Apparently, they grow big too. So.
Yeah. So. Just saying.
Okay. Whoops.
There's a cross over there.
A cross?
A crossover.
Oh, okay.
With the black-eyed children and aliens.
Sure.
Or space travel or whatever. Oh, come on.
No, I'm just messing with volume here. All right.
Don't touch any buttons.
Yeah. I didn't touch any before.
All these buttons are beeping and flashing.
Flashing and beeping. All right, so we got about 15 minutes left.
Cool.
That pisses me off when we have crashes like that. But anyway, so what were we talking about?
I think you said something about ants.
Insectoids.
Actually, it was because I was playing the music.
Yeah, giant spiders I'm not fond of.
I'm not too crazy about spiders either.
I don't like them at all. When I kill one, it's therapy. Ants I can deal with. Although I saw that movie Them. Remember Them?
That's pretty old school. I like that.
I am such a fan of old school horror movies. You have and Godzilla.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's a good, and I like that you brought that up because a lot of the old school 50s and 40s and 50s reports and things like that about UFOs really was a convergence of a lot of things, including that fear of the nuclear age and radiation exposure and things like that.
Absolutely.
And if you look at if you go back and look at those black and white movies, the cheesy B movies about UFOs, there's always a theme about that they're here because they we're gonna destroy ourselves because of nuclear weapons and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I go back and I call it a convergence of events. You know, what is UFOs? And it's really a convergence of misidentified flying objects, Cold War hysteria, cheesy B movies and media and things like that. You put all those together into a soup bowl and that's what you have today is that type of ufology. And that's why probably serious, scientists and academia don't really pursue the study of UFOs anymore.
Right.
That's too bad.
Jude says, do you think we're going to have an asteroid hit, and do you think we'll have the technology to stop it?
That's really multiple questions, and I could have multiple answers. Yes. The geological record clearly indicates that not only our planet but all the bodies in the solar system.
Oh, look at the moon!
Have been inundated with asteroid hits, in the last millennia.
Right.
And we're due for one. We're due for one.
No, due for a biggie.
Depending on sizes, the big one, that happened 65 million years ago. That one happens about every 100 million years ago. The one that they call the Earth extension event. About every 100 million years, so we're almost due for one. But I think with near Earth objects, there's a lot of programs out there that are detecting these things every day, and I think NASA has a pretty good hold on what's out there. And a lot of these things come from the asteroid belt.
Yep.
And people think of the asteroid belt as this huge giant belt of gazillions of these killer asteroids. And really it's not. The gaps between each asteroid are hundreds and thousands of miles apart.
Right.
And if you put all these asteroids together, they barely make up the size of the moon.
Yeah.
I think it's just one fifth of the moon. So when you look at Star Wars and people going through these asteroid belts and it's like they're inundated by billions of asteroids, that's really Hollywood.
That's a bunch of crap.
That's
right.
Not what it really is.
And there aren't that
many. I think there's only a couple hundred of these big giant Earth you know, killing asteroids out in the asteroid belt.
And you're talking, what, something the size of like a bus, right?
Yeah.
Would that be catapult?
Something
probably
a little bigger than that. Probably
you need something
that.
Like a quarter mile across to do major damage.
Yeah, right. It's probably about a mile. Anyway, but a lot of people don't.
But we can just send Bruce Willis up there.
We could.
Because
I think we could just send Bruce Willis up there with his fists, and that would just handle it.
Yeah,
but he'll just
Bruce Willis rocks.
But people also usually don't understand Jupiter's gravitational pull. Jupiter plays a huge role
in
preventing asteroids from actually, you know, hitting the Earth. So that's pretty cool. So if it wasn't for Jupiter, I think we would have been long gone a long time ago.
Yep.
As far as technology, I don't put too much stock in the movies where you see them shooting nuclear missiles at it and, you know, they save the world. That'll probably make things even worse, depending how far the asteroid is.
You're going to have, like,
instead of one asteroid, you have thousands of them.
Of little ones that wreak havoc.
Well, the easiest way is to push it out of the side.
Just get it out of the way,
Change the direction of it.
Yeah, and that would take, you know, you'd have to actually catch up to it, you know, months and years before it actually gets into the gravitational pull of the Earth, and then slowly use propulsion, you know, any type of, there's different type of theories out there what type of propulsion system would be used, but slowly push it, you know, out of Earth's trajectory as much as possible.
And then worry about it,
50, 100 years from now when it comes back into orbit.
And let me tell you something, if anyone's out there is listening, has ever played Angry Birds Star Wars version, you know this.
Yes, because that's, you know, accurate.
Bruce Willis can't save us. Who's the other guy? Robert Duvall in the other movie?
Yeah.
You can just land Bruce Willis on the asteroid. He'll take care of it, all right?
Deep Impact, the other one.
Deep Impact. Yeah. That sounds like a porno flick.
Yeah, Deep Fudge Pack, yeah.
But sadly, the astronauts never lived in any of those movies.
No.
Oh, no, some of them made it back. Didn't they?
Yes, right.
The guy with all the strippers
made
it back. Yeah.
Yeah, actually in both they made it back.
I was kind of upset the big guy, the fat guy, didn't make it back. I liked him.
The one that recently passed?
He bounced off and went into Never Never Land.
Yeah.
I liked him.
Talking about you're talking about the one that was in, he does the voice of, never mind, doesn't matter. We only have 8 minutes left. So.
Yeah, we're like UFOs to asteroids.
That's right. So with 8 minutes left, why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you, where they can find you, where you can find your evidence, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of social media, other than Facebook. I actually killed my Facebook the other day. I did some analytics, and it wasn't really going as far as I wanted. You know, my website is aerial-phenomena.org. It's really a combination of both, you know, space science and UFOs. And you can find everything there, you know, from how to report a UFO, whether you want to learn some terminology that UFO investigators use, that can be there too. Literally thousands of different pictures of, you know, man-made objects to classic UFOs. All our UFO cases are there. And just like this podcast will be uploaded, there's several, I don't know, I think we're up to 20, 25 podcasts up there. Including some interviews that I think are pretty cool. The best, you know, if you want to stay in touch with me every day, obviously, you know, I'm on Twitter all day, and I use Twitter as a means to communicate anything from UFO reports to some media reports, any conferences in the area or radio programs and things like that. And, you know, I'd like to throw some humor in there. And, you know, I'm pretty much open too. You know, my email is just about everywhere on the internet, you know, director@aerial-phenomena.org. I'm always looking for good investigators, you know, so if anyone's ever interested in learning to be a UFO investigator, I'm always open to bringing new people on board. I'm just looking for people that are enthusiastic about this. And want to follow an actual investigative process to come to a conclusion. I'm not looking for PhDs with astrophysics or those types. Although those will be helpful, but There is really no criteria for being an investigator.
I would think you'd want an open mind.
I want some people that are open mind, have a sense of adventure,
think out of the box.
But take some criticism, because you have to be open to criticism. God knows how many nasty emails I've received in the last year about, you know, no, that is an alien. I don't care what you say, Antonio. And I think you brought it up earlier, is we have to work together as a community.
Absolutely.
Because if the aliens exist, they're probably up there in orbit laughing at us because we're trying to figure out who's going to be on the sci-fi channel first. Mm-hmm. And we need to stay away from that because, really, if you look at those shows, they don't last too long. You know, 1 or 2 years. You know,
right.
If you're Zach Bagans and you're cute, you might last 4 or 5 years. But
he's on travel.
He's on travel, or you know.
Well, you get Ghost Hunter's been on for
Don't give up your career. My guidance is if that's what you want to do, that's cool. That's your life. But don't give up your career or your education for one, you know, a couple episodes and things like that.
Right.
And that's pretty much it, man. I really want to thank you guys for bringing me on board. I thought this was one of the coolest shows I've done so far. I'm pretty upset that the NSA knocked us out a
couple
times.
Keeps knocking us down, yep.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'll have a talk with them tomorrow, see what's going on.
They knock us down and we just get right back up.
Screw you at the drive-in.
Seriously, if you're missing the MP3, then we know something's going on.
Yeah. Well, so normally I get the MP3 posted that night, the night of the show, but I'm going to have to stitch a couple of them together, so it's probably going to take a couple of days.
Cool. I just want to thank you. I want to thank all my followers and fans out there. I get so much support every day for what we're doing. This is not about me. This is about me educating the public about this really interesting topic, and we have a long way to go before we drain the swamp, as my deputy director says. We will drain the swamp and revive ufology for the 21st century.
Excellent.
Right, and we still got about 2 minutes left, but I do want to say that I don't even know what my guests are next week. Let me take a look. So, yeah, unfortunately, the show will not be posted tonight. It's probably going to take a couple of days. So if you're listening or
technological
late,
problems, sorry.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm going to have to
I got something for you for the guys listening. If you email me, you got my email. If you email me your mailing address within the next 30 minutes, I'm going to send them a free Aerial Phenomena bumper sticker. So
you rock. You rock.
But I'm looking at the clock, so if the email's post-dated 10:30 p.m. EST, you'll not get it. But send me your mailing address by 10:30 tonight, and I'll send everybody a free Aerial Phenomena bumper sticker.
Awesome. Thanks. Oh, would you stop it? All right, so next week is High Spirits Paranormal. Our next guest next week will be High Spirits Paranormal.
And I am so serious, Antonio, if you do anything up in the Northeast, ring-a-ding-ding us.
I'm going to go check out that Wampity-Sanka, whatever you call it.
A Puckwudgie or Hockamock Swamp.
Yeah, whatever it was. I'm going to go check it out.
All right, so I'm going to kick off the end of the show here. So we'll see you guys next week. And Antonio, thank you very much for coming around.
Yes, thank you.
Where's the clock there?
You got the clock again. I got shot. It's okay.
All right, good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Be well.
You have been listening to Equipped with Parahunter Pete Stagman. You can find Pete Stagman at Facebook or visit www.parahunter.com.
I was waiting for you. Hey, what's wrong?
Oh, it's nothing. It's just a readjustment.
Your eyes. Hey, what's wrong?
Oh, it's nothing. It's just a readjustment.
Your eyes.
This idea is a dream.
knows. But tonight, I saw very clearly. The vision comes and goes. But tonight, I saw very clearly.